This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Big day. As we discussed yesterday, we got the trade deadline, NFL trade deadline. We already got some action this morning on the NFL trade deadline.
We're moving seventh round receivers, baby.
Who's a receiver has moved?
Jonathan Mingo, former Ole Miss.
Where to where?
He is moving.
I'd lost track of Jonathan Mingo.
It was easy to do. He is moving from Carolina, hence maybe why you've lost track. Receivers go to die in Carolina, and he is headed to the Dallas Cowboys.
They're buyers.
Correct.
They're buyers.
Correct.
Unaccountably, no Dak for a bit.
No,
but buyers
Dak,
nonetheless.
Dak headed to IR. Hey, listen, you got to help Cooper Rush out any way you can.
That's exactly right. So we got the NFL trade deadline. There's multiple reasons this is a big day, as we discussed yesterday. We got Maction tonight, Jeffrey, don't we? We have the first playoff bracket will be unveiled.
Rankings, yes.
Rankings this evening. And so that will be thrilling. And then there's the election. So, big day. Big
Correct.
Day for all kinds of reasons. Today, a big day also because it marks the return of Charles Fishman to the program. Fish on Friday on Tuesday. Last week, he was off lollygagging. No, he wasn't lollygagging. He was working. He was emceeing a water conference, which sounds...
He wasn't working here.
He wasn't working here. He was presiding over a conference. But he's back, and so that's good. We got Fishman back. We also have Chris Harrington. So the lineup today is Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. And then Fish on Friday on Tuesday returns this Tuesday. Today we will do that as well. We do have many things to talk about, including two basketball games last night of great interest. There is the election today. Something like 80 million people have already voted, including Jeffrey, but not me yet. I'm an election day voter. So I'll head over at some point and vote today. In terms of, not going to spend a lot of time on it. It does feel like Jimmy Kimmel said, and it's honestly original to him. Claire said it yesterday too, just talking to me about it. It feels like the whole country is waiting for the results of a medical scan. You know, like a biopsy,
sure.
You know, and it, honestly, it doesn't matter. Like either side thinks the other side is, it would be grim news
right.
If it came back positive, but it's like the whole country, there is real, and we have not talked a lot about it on this show, and we're not going to talk a lot about it on this show, but there is real anxiety about this election in this country. I think we are united in our anxiety over this election. I saw a recent survey of the American Psychological Association, and according to 7 of 10 people describe themselves as extremely anxious and worried about this election, and 56% of the people surveyed think that it could represent the end of democracy. And so that's the level of anxiety that is out there today about this election. In terms of when we will start hearing things, you can pretty much safely go watch the rankings show without thinking you're going to miss a lot of breaking news on the election. But polls close in Georgia, this is Central Time, at 6. In Carolina, in North Carolina, at 6:30. In Pennsylvania at 7, in Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, and Iowa at 8, and in Nevada at 9. Now, so that's when the polls will close. one you'll start to hear is a slightly different matter because Pennsylvania, for example, they can't start counting the early votes early, right? And so Pennsylvania, you aren't going to hear about that. Pennsylvania and Michigan, et cetera, you aren't going to hear that. You might have some idea by the time we go to sleep tonight, but that's pretty much it. Georgia and North Carolina, you'll hear a lot of votes were cast early and can be counted, and so you will hear about them pretty early. You'll get some indication. So just in terms of like the way this breaks, if for whatever reason, like if Trump is, it appears the early stuff you're learning, Trump's going to win Georgia, appears to be winning Georgia, and appears to be winning North Carolina, then you're like, this could be a long night, because then really it's going to be whether Harris can hold what she calls the blue wall or whatever else. It's going to come down to that. If, on the other hand, early on you hear that Harris is doing surprisingly well and is carrying the day in Georgia and North Carolina, then I think you're looking at something that could be over earlier. But again, that's just in terms of timing, and that's purely a product of which states we will hear about earliest. But it could be a long, long day. Obviously, we didn't know about...
I don't think it's likely to be decided tonight.
No, it's not going to be decided tonight. We didn't know... It won't... Like, when the Associated Press declares a winner, the Associated Press declared a winner in 2020 four days after the election. It took 4 days in 2020. Now, 2000, of course, was days and days and days and days and days. We had to go up to the Supreme Court. We had all of that. But it's... last time it was 4 days before AP, the Associated Press, called the race. So you'll have some indications tonight, obviously, but there you go. So that is that on that. We may touch on it a little more with Charles when he returns to the show in the second hour. We did have two notable basketball games last night, Jeffrey. The Memphis Tigers and the Memphis Grizzlies. And let's talk Memphis Tigers first. They triumph. One Tiger over the Missouri Tigers in the Laird Veach Trader game, 83-75. The Memphis Tigers win. And it was a journey, Jeffrey.
Boy, was it.
I would say it was a journey. And early on, Memphis couldn't do anything, wasn't hitting shots, was turning the ball over, couldn't handle Missouri's zone, and Missouri's up by as many as 14. And you're like, holy crap. And this, by the way, falls on the same day that Tyreek Smith, we learn that he is, in fact, gone.
Yep.
Now, I have never thought that the Tyreek Smith saga is some evidence of chaos, disarray, disruption, whatever else. Certainly by itself, it is not. And he is not that important a player. Does get a little roster, does get a little thin without him.
Sure.
We saw that, by the way, last night, foul trouble at the end of the game. Three Memphis players had fouled out, and they were, you know, it was getting pretty, it was, had it been a closer game or gone into OT, you would have gotten dicey. So for depth purposes, sure, useful player. There's a reason they wanted him to be on the team. I had never seen that as some evidence of, certainly by itself, evidence of chaos. The only way you can consider it, the only reason it actually took on the significance it did in Memphis was because it was just the next thing.
Yeah.
Right? It was on top of all the other things. It was on top of a roster that had turned over completely and a firing of coaches, you know, on the eve of the season and all of that and the NCAA stuff. And so it was only in that context. People leave programs all the time. That's the world of college football, college basketball. Honestly, it's the world of college sports now. And then Tyreek Smith, let's be honest, this will be five schools.
Yep.
This is not, if you're wondering where the issue is here, it's, you look at the record. This will be five schools. DJ Stephens, he retweeted that he's leaving. He said, five schools is diabolical.
Yep.
I don't know that it's diabolical, but it certainly is striking. Now, of course, it says it's too bad as a program that you have to rely on that sort of a player, right? That who's that much of a I'm in it for the money kind of guy. So it would be nice if you could have enough continuity and whatever in a program that you don't have to be taking those folks to begin with. But whatever. I didn't consider that to be a particularly big deal. And I didn't even consider it to be a particularly big deal as the season unfolded. And the team found out over the weekend. So it's not like the team got this blow as the game basically was ready to tip off. But still, lose Tyreek Smith, and then you come out and you fall behind by 14, and you look bad. You look bad. You look like, holy crap, this is the team that couldn't shoot against North Carolina. This is the team that couldn't shoot against Alabama. This is the team that can't shoot tonight. And they look utterly undone facing this zone.
And they couldn't get back on defense.
They weren't getting back on defense. They were giving up
easy buckets. The shooting thing, I kind of like, at a certain point, I was like, well, I don't think this is going to be a great shooting team. The not being able to just get back and just giving up the layups, that
giving
was
up
what
layups,
was driving me.
Turnovers, a lot of turnovers, yeah. Giving up layups. It was kind of appalling. And I gather there were even some boos. So it was like, holy crap. Like, we hope that this isn't a season where we're talking about Penny Hardaway's future, but are we going to have to start talking about it tomorrow? Like, is this the topic that's going to immediately pop up? And then Memphis puts together one hell of a second half. Just an incredibly impressive second half. Now, not unlike what happened last year.
Yeah.
In the same circumstance, honestly. Fell behind Missouri early on and then came back in the second half. But in the second half, 51-33. They blew them out in the second half. And there's all kinds of theories for what happened. There's the Tyrese Hunter gave a good speech theory. How do you like that one?
I mean, you know, I love a good locker room speech.
You love a good locker room speech. And Tyrese Hunter was calling people out, according to Parth Upadhyay, in the locker room. Well, he was quoting Tyrese Hunter. So according to Tyrese Hunter in the locker room at halftime. Penny said that they just showed him film clips. They showed him clips of what they had done wrong. And then they came out and they cranked up the pressure in the second half. And it was stunning how fast it turned. It was stunning how undone. Like, who looked worse, Memphis in the first half or Missouri in the second half?
I mean, maybe it's because I'm biased because this is the team that I'm watching. I thought Memphis in the first half looked worse than Missouri did in the second half.
Missouri in the second half looked utterly, it's a close call, because Missouri in the second half looked utterly incapable of doing anything against that defense. Absolutely incapable of doing anything. They had 11 turnovers in the second half. They shot 33% from the field in the second half. In the meantime, Memphis, 15-26, shooting 57.7% from the field, 4 of 6, that's 66.7% from three. They were hitting free throws too. Memphis overall on the night, 23 of 29, that's a nifty 79%, and that's with the Hakamusa strategy being deployed. And so Memphis.
Listen, if you can get 5 of 7 from Musa, you'll take that all year.
Was it 5 of 7 or 6 of?
I'm sorry. He finished 6 of 10. Same thing. But he was 5 of 7 in the second half.
Right. Yes. 5. Yeah, that's right. 5. Yes. And 6 of 10 from Musa. And then PJ Haggerty was tremendous, which is by the way, been his modus operandi so far. Big second halves. He had finished with 25, 22 of them in the second half to carry the day. Tyrese Hunter, though, also dramatically better in the second half. He had 13 points in the last 10 minutes of the game. Musa was really good He hit enough free throws that, like, fine, keep sending me the line. I'll keep doing this.
Well, the big thing for me is he hit enough free throws to stay on the floor.
Yes.
Because then there's been other times where it's like he's missing so many free throws that you can't have him on the floor. And I think a huge part of the defense in the second
half
was
having Musa on the floor.
Yeah.
Huge part of the defense. He ends up with 14, 7 rebounds, 2 blocks. And so he was really good as well. Listen, who knows how this season is going to go? I still have no idea. I was asked Jason and John finally have me on Mondays now. They moved me on to Mondays, and they did want a prediction for the season. And so I predicted tournament, but I did not predict Sweet 16. Now, on the theory that they should be the best team in the conference, right?
Yeah, UAB had lost a bye game last night.
And UAB lost the bye game.
Game one, whatever, but
right,
still.
And so they should be the best team in the conference. And so whether it's because they roll in the conference and get an automatic bid, or whether it's because they, I mean, get a at-large bid, or whether they win the automatic bid, I think they will go to the tournament. And I think it'll be 3 out of 4 years for Penny for tournament appearances. I don't think there's enough talent and firepower here, but you never know how those things break. You know, you just never know how the tournament breaks. It's hard for me to imagine there's enough firepower for them to get a high enough seed that it's reasonable to predict them going to the Sweet 16. But what they showed last night was impressive in terms of tenacity. The guard play,
yep.
I think the guard play is going to be really good on this team. And it's not – here's the thing. I could have said all this last year after this game.
Sure.
Right, after this game, you would have said what guts they showed coming back in the second half. Look at that. They came alive. They figured it out. I probably did. I didn't go back and read the column that I wrote after that game. I think I did write a column after that game. They were so you could say all of that, and then the season happened the way it happened, right? So there are obviously no guarantees. It does feel like this is a team that almost any team you assume isn't going to do what last year's team is, because that was crazy. Teams don't just quit like that. They don't just belly flop like that. So that's an aberration just generally. But then you hear about the character of the players that they have generally recruited, Tyrese Hunter and P.J. Haggerty and these dudes. They seem tough-minded. They're certainly experienced. I have a hard time believing that they're going to follow the path. They followed the path of last year's team last night, but I have a hard time believing it's going to go that way this year. What were your impressions? From takeaways from the evening.
It was fascinating to watch the first half, because if you had the sound on, like, you could feel the anxiety through the screen, and you could, like, beyond just the frustration, the boo birds, like, you could feel like the, oh, here we go again. And then in the second half, like, I think a big part of it was settling down and realizing, all right, we have a way to attack this zone. We can crush them in the paint, and let's start getting the easy makes. And then, honestly, when Tyrese hit the three, that was like, I think they're going to win. Like, when he hit that three to take the lead, yeah. And the crowd's going nuts, I was like,
crowd was very clearly a factor.
Yeah.
It was interesting, though, because I think what you said is exactly right. You could hear – normally a crowd wouldn't react to a slow start with the degree of anxiety and misery that crowd seemed to. But again, we're not starting from zero here.
Right.
We're starting with what we just witnessed from Memphis basketball. And yeah, that was a team that was so unappealing and unengaged that when they chose not to go to any post, it was obvious they weren't going to go to a postseason tournament. They didn't like each other. No one liked them. No one wanted to see them play together again. And so then when you see a team come out and be as listless as they looked in the first half, it wasn't just based on that first half. It was based on everything.
Yes.
And it's funny because I ran an errand at halftime, and so I was listening to Wolo, and the way he put it was, he said, they were down by 10 at the half. He said, fans in FedEx Forum walking around with puzzled expressions on their faces. And that was, it was grim. Today could have been really grim. And we got the Grizzlies to talk about, too, by the way.
Yep.
Today could have been really grim, but they came back and played a second half that not only gets them the victory, but I think should earn them a little bit of credit going forward for the things that we've been talking about. Guard play, tenacity, different kind of team, Penny's defensive team of the sort that Penny likes. So I found it to be highly encouraging. They looked awful in the first half. It's funny. John John tweeted, they look terrible. Memphis looks terrible. And he's left up that tweet. What do you do there? You know, they did, though.
Yeah, I'm not big on the whole
digging up the tweets of people who are in the moment
in time,
they
look terrible. Things can change.
He didn't say they are terrible.
Right.
He said they look terrible. And they did look terrible. Like, there's a lot of, even on the Memphis Space Tiger Facebook page, someone's dug up unhappy things that people posted in the first half. People post unhappy things in the first half because they were unhappy.
What was there to be happy about?
What the hell was there to be happy about in the first half? And then there was plenty to be happy about in the second half.
I did think, I will say this, though, if we're going to try to find the silver lining in the first half, I thought there was a moment where Missouri could run away, and they kind of fought back. They didn't close out the final minute well, but I think they clawed back to like make it like 4 or 5. And then instead of it being like a 20-point game at the half, it was still only 10. Like, I thought it was much more manageable.
It was certainly within reach. Yeah. It was certainly within reach. And it always felt like in reach if Memphis could get their S together.
Right.
And they did get their S together. Defensively, a huge difference between the two halves. Just look at the 11 turnovers. You force 11 turnovers in the second half as Missouri just couldn't do anything. It felt like against Memphis. Again, the second half score, 51-33. So I did get in the midst of all this, I got a request. We have a request from the audience. Take phone calls, Jeff.
All right.
This is what it says. Take phone calls, Jeff, and the people will be singing songs of triumph and future fortune. Big Z. I will. 445-0929, 445-0929. He says, take phone calls tomorrow. This was last night after the victory. Take phone calls tomorrow, and the people will be singing songs of triumph and future fortune. The phone number is 445-0929. If you have a song of triumph, future fortune, or just a report of how it felt last night. I did hear some reports about the game presentation not being the most spectacular that they have ever seen. I don't think, contrary to Big Z, I don't think it's the kind of win that's going to have people lighting up the phones with songs of triumph and future fortune. I think people are happy to get the W, and you know what else they are? I still think they're waiting to see. Obviously, they play UNLV next, but I'm giving them a chance because Big Z asked, and my prediction is few, if any, phone calls and no songs of triumph and future fortune, because it's a win. It's a win in a game in which they were favored. It certainly was more promising than the alternative, but people are waiting to see on this team.
And I do think that is also a reflection of last year, too.
I agree 100%.
I think everyone has learned the lesson of, well, what's the context of this? Like, it certainly felt like a good win. It doesn't mean that last night was not fun and that wasn't enjoyable for everyone in the building.
Beats the hell out of the alternative.
Correct. But I do think everyone's learned the lesson
you got to build this back trust by
right.
You know, like, it's
like, hey, we're not going to just.
It's like after a relationship goes really bad. You got it. You can't build it back in a day, right?
Correct.
You just got to, you know, moments of trust. But if someone wants to call in with songs of triumph or future fortune, or report on what they thought the experience was last night, we'll certainly take those calls. It was loud, very clearly in the second half. Missouri coach mentioned that multiple times in his post-game presser, and so that was great. By the way, Penny now 9-2 against the SEC the last two seasons. That's a song of triumph. 13-8 against the SEC over the course of his tenure as Memphis wins another phone game. All right, we'll do this briefly to see if anyone else. My prediction was no songs of triumph, but just a W that you're happy to have. But 445-0929, and we do have Dennis in Whitehaven. Dennis.
Hey, Jeff, look, no songs of Sweet 16 or nothing like that, but the first half, I did use the words you used when you were live on air when your hot water heater busted. So I was kind of in that zone, but, I mean, let's just give credit where credit due. I mean, the guy takes criticism, deserves it sometimes, but he made adjustments. He said at halftime they were going to stop the transition and they were going to attack the zone, and they did that, man. And, you know, just give them credit. The defensive team fits this town, blue-collar workers, and I think they're going to be fine. And that Baraka, however you say his name, a Koji, I guess, mm-hmm. He reminds me of, like, a Bledsoe that played for Kentucky, or Chris Garner back in the day. He's a dog on defense.
He is a dog on defense.
You know, and I just love this team, man. And like I said, no Sweet 16.
Love Let's this team is pretty much a song of triumph. That's good. I'll take it.
All right. Y'all have a good one, man.
Thank you, Dennis. 445-0929 is the number if anyone else wants to get in on that. Congratulations for the Tigers. They are 1-0. And we have high hopes for this season. Well, I hope it goes well. The alternative would not be fun. And so we hope it goes well. And that was a fine start. We'll talk about the Grizzlies when we return. We got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. Talk about the Grizzlies with him, too. We got the trade deadline, NFL trade deadline, which we will keep you up to date on, and Fish on Friday on Tuesday as well. First, let me remind you, if you're thinking about getting engaged this holiday season, Robert Irwin Jewelers is the place to go. And I always talk about the Robert Irwin Jewelers on Perkins Extended right across from Novel, but they have one in the Bartlett Town Center and the South Lake Center in South Haven as well. You can check them out at rijewelers.com. And what you'll discover when you walk in there is, I'll be honest, it's kind of nerve-wracking shopping for a diamond ring. But you go in there, they can, if you can dream it, if you can, an idea, a photo, whatever, they can create it. And you have the peace of mind that comes from the meant-to-be guarantee, where your custom-made engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you have 365 days to return it. So you don't have to get all too worked up about it. That's how confident they are that you will be thrilled and she will be thrilled with your engagement ring. Plus, good things like financing that 24 months deferred interest or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. It's Robert Irwin Jewelers. It's the place to go this holiday season. RIJewelers.com. We'll talk Grizz when we come back. NFL trade deadline. It's Jeff Gawkins Show on a Tuesday, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Gawkins Show. Jeffrey, someone on Twitter said that the Tigers win last night felt like a Ryan Silverfield win. I didn't realize that was a label, but I understand what I disagree with that. It was an SEC team. It wasn't a great SEC team by any stretch, but it wasn't. Missouri's a credible university, a credible opponent. I don't think it's a Ryan Silverfield win. Maybe it's a Ryan Silverfield win over a bad Florida State team.
Yeah, that would be
the comparable.
Maybe, but at the same time, we also don't know
what Missouri is
right.
yet. But
they just put together a new team as well.
It's not a Ryan Silverfield win over, you know, Charlotte or
this was not having to go, you know, 80 yards in 45 seconds to hang on to beat.
But I also understand the skepticism. Sure. I understand why if people don't want to fully get on board. We had Dennis who called in who loves this team already, and that's great. If there are people who don't want to get fully on board because they've been burned before emotionally, I understand that too. In the meantime, while all that was happening, the Memphis Grizzlies dropped a game 106-104. They've been swept now by the Brooklyn Nets. And it is interesting. I feel less bad about it than I did after the first one.
Yes, because this one didn't feel like a complete lack of effort.
Well, and also the Nets have proved to be, at least the early season Nets, it's your misfortune that you're getting them early before they've, you know, before they've disgorged some of these players at the trade, you know, whatever, before they've decided to go all in on tanking or something. They've got a bunch of credible NBA players on that team. Dennis Schroeder is absolutely becoming a Grizz killer. But the real dilemma for me last night is whether to feel good or bad. Here's the reasons I would feel bad. The Grizzlies lost another game to the frickin' Brooklyn Nets, and they lost by two. They've been swept by the Nets, and every win matters. They're all going to come back to haunt you in the end. And so I'm not going to feel happy after an L, period. Here's the reason to feel good. Well, first of all, you had two 360s from Ja. Just two more just holy smoke plays from Ja. If you needed a fully engaged, dangerous Ja, is he back? You know, two more. The highlight plays that dude stacks up, just incredible. But then you also had the breakout game from Zach Edey.
Yep.
And more importantly, the breakout game from Zach Edey. Zach Edey with 25 points, 12 rebounds, 4 blocks. He had 7 dunks and as you doubtless heard if you were watching the broadcast or if you read Drew Hill this morning, he is the first player to have 25, 10, and 4 on 90% shooting, because he was 11 to 12 on the night, on 90% shooting since Hakeem.
Who?
In 84. Hakeem Olajuwon.
Okay.
In 84. The last player to have 25, 10, and 4 on 90% shooting. Now, sometimes stats feel manufactured to produce a result, right?
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's, and the part here that feels like on 90% shooting, you know, like the...
When you start adding in a lot of qualifications,
you get, okay, I got this in order to produce a result that was really old or impressive, right? But still, damn impressive. 25, 10, and 4 on 90% shooting. He was terrific, including another three-pointer, by the way. And it feels like...
And the other key for me is they didn't lose the minutes he was on the floor.
That's true. Still finding his... But here's
no
the
question.
It feels like you're seeing growth. Maybe that's the wrong word for used for Zach Edey. Already a lot of growth have done in Zach Edey. You're sort of seeing this progression where it is very clearly he is getting more and more comfortable. He is figuring out the speed of the game. He's figuring out the geometry of the game. He's figuring out the pro game, what he can get away with, what he can't get away with, how to use his body effectively. And he's looking dramatically more comfortable. And so you're seeing, like, look how bad he looked early.
Yeah.
And here you are, and you're like eight games in, and you're like, oh, he's feeling it. He's finding his way now. And so I can't imagine, I guess I never could have imagined, that I would feel as good about a Nets loss as I did about that Nets loss.
Yes, because of if Edey is really going to be good, then that changes the Grizzlies. That changes the Grizzlies' ceiling.
And then the truth of the matter is that, and I agree with that completely. You need him to be. Listen, this is a team. Here's the truth. This is a team right now that is starting two rookies and heavy minutes to two guys elevated off of two ways.
Yep.
Literally, that's the kind of thing that lottery teams do. You're starting your first round pick, you're starting your second round pick, and you're starting two players elevated, and not starting, but your heavy minutes, heavy rotation minutes to two players who are elevated off of two-way deals. That's a lottery team.
Yeah.
And honestly, what you saw last night was they didn't shoot well. And they shot 8 of 30 from three. That's 26.7%. And the truth of the matter is you had not a great game from Jalen Wiles.
Yes.
And that was a huge part of it. 3 of 12. 3 of 12, 0 of 5. Like, if you had, and again, you can't stipulate good, perfect health on the part of anybody. But if you had Desmond Bane and Luke Kennard in that game, I think this would have won.
Yeah, I'm with you. Because I think this game was decided by three-point shooting.
Yeah, Dorian Finney-Smith dropping in all these three-pointers in the second half. Schroeder was pesky again. And it's not like the Nets lit it up from three.
No, but they shot league average.
They were 13 of 36, 36%.
Yeah.
Grizzlies were 8 of 30, 26%. And so that, to me, plus there is, you're missing Marcus Smart, who might have been effective defensively. Like, I do think Jaren talked afterwards about dynamic guards who know how to get downhill, and you saw that last night again. Like, who do they? They got Jalen Wills and Ja Morant as your perimeter defenders.
Yeah.
A rookie and a guy whose defense has always been a question.
Yep.
And so, and then you've got, yeah, and so you just, no one could shoot last night. That was the biggest problem. And I don't. Here's the point. When the Grizzlies are healthy, you're not going to be counting on Jalen Wells to play 33 minutes and to put up 12 shots and 5 3-pointers. This to me is, and Chris's piece that he wrote, he talked about yesterday, where he's addressing the impact of injuries on the early season and how the truth of the matter is, this team is as injured this year as it was last year when it started so disastrously for the Grizzlies. But your start, Jalen Wiles, man, 33 minutes, 3 of 12, 0 of 5. And so that is a problem. Also a problem, Santi hasn't shot well lately. Like, that's a guy who you need. Like, when Santi and Wells, between them, those are your, like, shooters, ostensibly, on the, you know, those are your wings shooters on the in the starting lineup. They combine to go 7 of 24 from the field and 0 of 11 from 3.
Yeah, to me, it's like, I don't want to sit here and act like I'm putting this whole loss on Santi.
Huge, though.
But what you've seen is, especially when they're going to be diminished with the injuries,
you need Santi to hit shots.
Santi's the guy that has to kind of pick up the slack.
To say that I'm even counting on Jalen Wells is almost too much to ask of Jalen Wells. This would have been a good night. Yes, you would have liked a dramatically better game from Santi. Honestly, Jaren wasn't at his great at his best offensively either. And so they kind of muddled along. And I hate to say it, I think until you get Bane back, until you get Kennard back, until you get Vince back, while you are starting two rookies and relying heavily on two guys elevated off of two ways, it's a 500 team.
Yes. You got to get Vince, Gigi, Luke,
I mean, it's
Smart,
crazy
Bane.
The injuries,
I mean,
you
got to have basically five of your top nine back.
You got to have some, some of your wings back, man. So I don't actually, I mean, the problem is it looks like the season is going to be then an uphill battle the whole way, presuming, which you can't, but presuming that when these guys come back, there will be months of better health for the franchise going forward. It still feels like there will be a little bit of an uphill battle going forward. Although you see other teams dealing with this too. The Pelicans obviously dealing with this in a major way. The Lakers now. Yep. Anthony Davis, that's the next game the Grizzlies are playing. And AD has been dealing with a foot injury all along and exacerbated it last night. And in the locker room afterwards, someone asked LeBron what they were going to do with if AD's out. And AD from off camera says AD's not going to be out. Well, that remains to be seen. He could barely walk at the end of that game last night. And so injuries, that's not an exclusively Grizzlies thing. But I ultimately, given the cast of characters they're running out and given the big night from Zach Edey, I didn't feel bad.
The other thing that for me is important is, yes, okay, yes, you've dropped two to the Nets, or you get swept by the Nets, but they're not giving ground in the same way that they did early last year when they were shorthanded. Like, are they keeping pace? No, but they're not falling back drastically. I mean,
No, this is not a catastrophic start. It's just a kind of a mediocre start.
Correct, exactly.
So yes, there will be less climbing that needs to be done. All right. Other matters to talk about. We'll talk more about the Grizzlies with Chris when he joins us at 10. We do have the college football rankings to be released tonight, and we have the NFL trade deadline. Tick, 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 tick. Onward to the college football rankings, Jeffrey.
We're just ignoring Monday Night Football.
Oh, yeah, absolutely ignoring Monday Night Football. It's crazy.
There is this question, though, of, and I don't think it's true, but I do have people I talk to that I trust their football opinions. They believe that what the Chiefs are doing right now is similar to what the Eagles did last year. Remember, the Eagles started was like 10-1 or whatnot, but
except for this, we've seen the Chiefs
muddle,
and we've seen the Chiefs ultimately be spectacular. And so when they are only good enough,
right,
which is what they've been, we know they have spectacular in them because we've seen it. Not this particular team, but still.
Yes.
And with the Eagles, we had never really, except for that one brief fleeting moment in the Super Bowl, we saw Jalen Hurts briefly turn into one of the best quarterbacks in the league,
yep,
right? And so we hadn't, so I don't know. It was depressing to me to see Hopkins go off the way he did last night. You know, that was eight catches, 86 yards, two touchdowns. Kelce, obviously, with another big game. You keep waiting for him to get old, you know, and he wasn't. call up their schedule. What elite teams do they have left? They got the Bills in two games in Buffalo. So that's one. Do they have any, what other elite opponents do they face?
Okay. So you have the Broncos on Sunday at home. Okay. I think I know how that's going to go. At the Bills, at the Panthers, Raiders at home, Chargers at home. I mean, maybe.
Chargers, maybe.
Maybe their defense is.
Guess my question is the talk that we said we have not heard much of, can this team go undefeated? If and when they beat the Bills in 2 weeks, is that when it's going to really pick up in earnest?
I think so, because then the remaining schedule then goes at the Browns, the Texans at home, at the Steelers, at the Broncos. So,
there is not an elite. The only elite team on that schedule left is Buffalo.
Correct. Unless we're wrong about Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh, this is not a mirage. And I'm open to the idea that it's not a mirage, right. But at the same time, I still don't quite believe it.
Has there been any other action on the any other?
I've seen.
Any other news?
I have my Schefter notification.
What we
set
have
up.
So far is Za'Darius Smith was dealt. That's been rumored for a long time. Pass rusher that they need, along with a seventh for a fifth and a sixth. That's a reasonable price to pay on a trade deadline, but good for the Lions for getting a pass rusher. The Bengals picked up a Khalil Herbert from the Bears. And so they make no trades at the trade deadline, but they did. It is interesting. There's this perception that the trade deadline in the NFL has gotten dramatically more active. If you look at, now this is since 2000, so it's not, this does not reflect the recent trends, but trade deadline trades since 2000, Major League Baseball has had 759 of them.
Okay.
The NHL has had 499 of them. The NBA has had 211 of them, and the NFL, since 2000, has had 42 of them. That's kind of amazing.
Well, especially when you consider 53-man rosters, there's more teams in the NFL than any other league.
42 trade deadline trades since 2000. Now, one of the issues is the NFL trade deadline for the longest time was much earlier in a season. And so people are like, I'm not getting rid of my players. I might still be good, right? Like, for the longest time, it was after week 6. Now they've moved it to after week 8. But it is still, relative to how much of the season has gone by, Major League Baseball season, it's after 70% of the season is gone. Here it's after 50-something percent of the season is gone. And so that's one reason that there is less action. Also, the truth of the matter is your ability to walk up to the plate and hit a baseball, you don't have to learn the system to do that.
Correct. You know, there's no verbiage.
There's nothing. You don't have to learn anything. You just got to go up and hit the damn baseball. And that's very different than if you're a guard.
Correct.
Right? And you got to learn their offensive linemen, protection schemes, and everything else.
I also feel like, though, and maybe this is anecdotal to your point, while I don't know if today will be the day that it's being billed as, I feel like we've had an increase of in-season deals like in the weeks leading up to the deadline. Like, I feel like the last 3 or 4 weeks, we've had more deals than we would normally see. I feel like most teams used to do the move of, all right, if we lose somebody, like, maybe we go get someone, but everyone was, like, kind of hesitant. Now it feels like more teams are more willing to say, like, all right, we've got this glaring hole. It's almost like they're portaling it, you know? All right,
It does feel, we didn't used to even talk about it.
Right.
We didn't used to talk about it, and now we do. Now, like, here are the teams. What are the holes? What are they going to do? It's something that we talk about. So in that way, it is different. All right. In terms of the college football rankings, predict the top 5.
All right. I think Oregon is going to be 1.
Oregon's clearly going to be 1. Yeah.
I'm going to say that they're going to put Georgia 2. I'm going to say Ohio State 3.
Does Georgia's impressive wins are
Texas, Clemson. Although depends on how you
Clemson.
Vote. Right.
And
but they have a road win at Texas.
Ohio State has Penn State.
Has a road win at Penn State.
Yeah, okay. Georgia, Ohio State.
All right. Then I'm going to say, I think then they're going to put Miami. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4.
I think they're going to knock down Miami.
I do think we are. I think we're kind of picking apart Miami. Like, I know the defense is not, like, the defense will give up an explosive play.
I'm not sure Miami's going to be ahead of Indiana.
I mean, isn't Miami's record better than Indiana's?
Yes, but yes and no. Indiana's blitzing everybody. Blitzing everybody.
I mean, Miami's had two relatively close games. They have the Virginia Tech Friday night game and then the Cal game. But, like, the Louisville win now looks better.
The Louisville win looks good. That win is. What other impressive wins does Miami have?
Well, I mean, that's kind of the problem with the ACC.
They don't.
Like,
they don't.
I mean, beating Florida has turned out to not be god awful, and they destroyed them.
Where's Tennessee going to be?
All right, so I'm going to put Indiana at 5. I'm going to say. Then they're going to have Penn State. Then they're going to have Tennessee. No, I'm sorry. They're going to have Texas. I think they're going to have Texas.
I don't think Tennessee's going to be in the top 10.
I think they will be.
Tennessee, if you look at Tennessee, what have they done? They have beaten Alabama. That's a huge one, obviously, right? But then the NC State win, is that impressive to you? Is the Oklahoma drilling a bad Oklahoma team impressive to you? And then do they care that they've struggled last four games, first half, like,
I think this is where SEC bias is going to come in.
So where they be 8?
So I'm going to say Texas will be at 6, Penn State will be at 7, Tennessee will be at 8, and then Bama at 9, and then LSU at 10. Because I don't know if you're aware what's on ABC this Saturday night. Could have a top 10 matchup. The question for me is, what do they do with, like, SMU? Where do they put Notre Dame? I mean, I think you're right. Where do they put Tennessee? Where do they put Alabama? Like, who's going to be the highest ranked one last team?
And I think the Notre Dame question is a really interesting question.
Yeah.
Where do they put Notre Dame? Here's what's interesting. You're having, on Election Day, you're having the unveiling of the first rankings. And do you know when the title game is?
I'm guessing Inauguration Day.
Inauguration Day.
It's Monday.
It's all very neatly, neatly arranged to fit the presidential race. So there you go. Joe Rexroad over the Athletic did an entertaining column about why college football is better than politics, right? And on all sorts of things. Like, their big rallies don't compare to football, big football games.
Oh, no.
Crowd, right?
No.
Crowd. Their mascots, pathetic. Like, mm-hmm. The elephant and the donkey compared to Ugga, you know.
Correct.
And Ralphie.
Beaver. Overrated Beaver.
Not even close.
Mm-hmm.
And goes on from there. Anyway, well, it'll be interesting. That will unfold tonight. We got Chris Harrington joining us coming up next. And then we got Fish on Friday on Tuesday after that. So we've got a busy second hour. Oh, a couple things we didn't mention, and you might have mentioned it yesterday. This broke during our show yesterday. Redbirds and Cardinals are going to be playing in AutoZone Park. That's fun. That'll be the 25th anniversary of AutoZone Park, and that's March 24th. Do you imagine you'll go to that? You're a big Cardinals dude.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be a fun thing to take my daughter to, and at that point she'll probably be able to go.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. You had... The Memphis women's soccer team beat Tulsa, came from behind for the first time this season, and won, scored 3 straight goals, I think it was, 4-2. And so they go to the semifinals against Rice on Thursday.
They had to give themselves some game pressure.
Memphis women hoops also won yesterday. They won their first game. Ole Miss women, very close,
yeah,
in Paris to beating USC, fell short. The men beat Long Island. There's a team, by the way. They got a bunch of players who played together. You know, Morrell, Brakefield,
They have some.
They got a core. They got a core of players.
They did a good job of keeping the ones they wanted to keep.
Yeah, they get, and that to me is what you're trying to do. You're not. No one expects you to keep even 2/3 of your team. Whatever.
UConn didn't keep everyone.
Keep the core of the team. I think Ole Miss has done that. UT beat Gardner-Webb last night, and Mississippi State won as well. Those are basically cupcake games.
Bama smoked.
Oh, the saddest story last night was Mark Few's kid.
That's a tough scene.
So Gonzaga gets a blows out Baylor, and Mark Few, it's such a blowout, he gets to put his kid into the game for a few minutes at the end. That's a sweet story, Jeffrey.
Uh-huh.
Let's stop it there. It was a little bit like a much worse version of Yuki going into the game for the Grizzlies in when he made his debut, because Mark Few's son got posterized like few have ever been posterized. It was a homicide right there on the court. It was really something.
I mean, the thing about this is, it was such a bad posterization.
Oh my God.
That nobody's going to talk about the fact that they absolutely mopped the floor with Baylor. I mean,
absolutely mopped the floor with Baylor.
But
we're talking about the posterization.
And the real problem
does
for him is,
does that kid laugh about the posterization?
Well, here's the real
part. He did try to get in the way. Give him credit.
But now it's like you've probably spent your whole life just being Mark Few's kid. Now you're the kid that just got posterized. And it's not like he's going to have more games and more opportunities to change the narrative. Like, he's a walk-on bench guy. So, like, this is just what we're always going to remember him for.
He will always be that. There's no question. He will always.
And I have watched it no fewer than 8 times.
It's absolutely brutal. All right, if you're selling your house, call Josh Heisa and his team at Keller Williams Realty. The phone number is 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147. The website is joshhasthebuyers.com. Because when you sell your house, what you want is you want buyers. You don't just want a buyer. You want buyers, plural. Honestly, you want multiple offers on your home. That way you can say, well, you know, I have this offer here, but this one's coming in a little bit higher. This one's coming in even higher. Well, that ultimately is what you want. Trudy put her house on the market and was nervous, understandably. Heard me talking about it, called Josh and his team at Keller Williams Realty, and she had multiple offers within 24 hours. That's because Josh knows how to market your house. Also, by the way, flexible fees, no upfront costs, let you out of your contract at any time. It's Josh Heisa, 901-461-8147, joshhasthebuyers.com. Chris Harrington joins us on the other side. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.